The film everybody knows, Elizabeth Murray, is an intimate portrait of the groundbreaking artist Elizabeth Murray. The film explores the relationship between Murray's family life and career and reconsiders her place in contemporary art history. The film will be shown as part of the Real Women in Film series at the Linda in Albany on Saturday night at 8 p.m. The film is directed and produced by Christy Kia, who will be speaking after the film is shown on Saturday. Kia has been in the contemporary film scene for 3 decades. She has been acclaimed for her work as a production designer, costume designer, and a producer of major feature films. Listen to this list. Graham and I were talking about this earlier, but Goodfellas, The Departed, Jonathan Demme's Manchurian Candidate, Philadelphia, Silence of the Lambs, The Brave One, and not only Sleepers, but Broadcast News. One of my favorite films of all time. So it's a great pleasure to welcome Christy Kia to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. Very nice to have you on the program.
Oh, thank you so much, Joe. I just want to correct it. It's Zia, Z-E-A, but that's okay.
My apologies.
No problem. No problem at all.
Well, thank you very much for being with us. Give us a sense of how this particular film came to be.
Well, it happened quite some time ago. Unfortunately, documentaries take a lot longer to make than other kinds of feature films. I met Elizabeth way back in the early 2000s, and I had been working at the time on these major films that you've mentioned, working with Jonathan Demme and Martin Scorsese, and I noticed that they had done these wonderful documentaries about people like Neil Young and Bob Dylan. And so Elizabeth was part of a group of women who I was also a part of, and we would go out to the wilds of Utah and hike and sort of catch up on our lives. And so one of those times I said to her, I'd really like to make a movie about you. I think you're great, and I think what you're doing is great. And she said, I'd love that. So that's how it started.
As I mentioned in the introduction, this film looks at the relationship between the family life and the career. Why is that an interesting place to start in this particular story?
Well, I think it's something that a lot of women face. We all want to have families. We all want to have kids. And we also want to have careers. And it's not always easy. And I think that one of the things that's so wonderful about what Elizabeth did was she was determined to be an artist, but she was also determined to have a kid, and she had three, two of which she had very late in life, in her 40s. And it was, for me, a fascinating study and something that I wanted to pass on to my children, just to say you can have it all if you want it badly enough.
And did that have an impact on the art? What is the progression of her artistic quality?
Well, it's a good question. I think in the beginning, she started really early. She was born into a very impoverished area, mid-states, and she came up, there was a teacher who, when she was 18 years old, said, I think you could be an artist, an art teacher, and she helped finance her to go into Chicago and study at the Art Institute there. And, of course, her painting in the beginning was all very influenced, as she said in the film, by a lot of male artists. But it didn't occur to her one bit that that was unusual, and she just kept copying and doing what they did. And then later, she started to develop a much different style that was more cartoony, and that sort of evolved into this kind of amazing abstract art that she did. And then those art pieces just started coming off the walls, and they were no longer in square formats or rectangular formats. They were all over the place. And I think that paralleled her life, and I think what she was trying to do was encapsulate what was going on in her personal life, and it came out the way it did on the canvas. And as she got more popular, she got bigger and used more color because that's what everybody thought was great about what she did. And there is something amazingly infantile about it, but not infantile. She grasps a kind of naivete, which I think is really fantastic, and then pushes it to extremes.
I just thought of this question, and because I realize that so often one of the things that I have to deal with is talking about visual art on the radio and describing visual art on the radio. Are there any particular challenges in having, in showing and portraying that visual, the piece of art in film?
Yes. I think it's very hard to turn a beautiful piece of art that's on a wall into something that's as captivating on film. But one of the things that I think Elizabeth Murray has going for her work is that it is so kinetic, and it is so, it kind of bounces off the wall at you. And I found myself, when I was filming her work, moving around it, moving behind it, underneath it, in it. There was not just the sort of big wide shot showing the whole thing and then getting into a little close up here and close up there. Her art is very very kinetic in its nature, and so I think that the camera fed off of that and just did some beautiful studies, and I think it was very successful actually.
When this really goes back to the initial question I asked you of what brought you to this project, but what do you look for in a subject when you're going to spend so much time, when you're going to spend so much an investigation, what do you need to know and what do you look for in a subject before you take on such a large project?
I think that one of the most important things is that it has to resonate with me. I too have very similar challenges in my life trying to figure out how to be a mom and a wife and an artist and a creative person. I think also the rights of women in the art world, you know, how they're treated in the art world, all of these things are very important to me. And I think that's one of the reasons why I thought Elizabeth's story was so captivating. And really and truly, because she also succeeded at it. I think she had a remarkable ability to synthesize everything in her life and make it as good as it could possibly be, all aspects of it. And I think that's what I want to pass on to my daughter. In fact, this film is dedicated to her. She's 26, and I think she too wants to know how to do it. You know, how do we do all the things we want to do and still have a satisfying career and or artistic need to be expressing ourselves in a very specific way? So these, I think that the subject matter has to resonate with me, and I think that that's going to be very important when I look at my next project, because I think that's what I'm worried about. I want to say something. I want to explore. I don't want to, you know, beat people over the head with it, but I do want people to be open to hearing what I have to say and understanding it. And I think in Elizabeth's case, she really embodied exactly what I think is ideal for women to aspire to in this century.
I mentioned read your list of credits, partial credits, earlier, and it's staggering. It's really an incredible body of work as a production designer. What exactly, and I want to talk a little bit more about what that role is, but is it nice for you to be the director and producer in a film and to have that free reign over a subject?
Oh, absolutely. I think one of the most important things about filmmaking is that it's a collaborative process, so that you're not just in a room by yourself like Elizabeth was, painting and doing what she did, only that she herself was the audience for however many months before everybody else was allowed to see it. The creative process in filmmaking is automatically and immediately collaborative, and you're dealing with a lot of people. And one of the things that production design taught me is that it's important to be able to listen to as many people as you can who have good ideas. And so in the course of doing that for so many years, it's almost natural that I would segue over into doing something along the lines of directing. The first thing I directed, actually, Jonathan Demme was the executive producer on, and it was a short subject for HBO a long time ago. In fact, my daughter was 3 months old at the time. And that was, you know, that was my first experience directing. And I think what that taught me, and also what this film taught me, is that it's really important to listen to people, not just do it all on your own.
When you, on all of those films that you worked at, what is the role of a production designer?
A production designer is one of the most key and important roles in the filmmaking process. Oftentimes we're hired, even I've actually been hired before the director's been hired on occasion, because one of the things that you're trying to do is help the production company figure out where the film is going to be shot, how much money it's going to cost to do, if it's a period film, what's the right city that you can film it in. That's not going to cost an arm and a leg, particularly if it's a period film. You're in charge of everything to do with the film on its visual plane, apart from, of course, the cinematographer, who then has to shoot it all. So you're looking for sets and your locations and props, and you're talking to the costume designer about what they're doing. It's an absolutely essential part of the filmmaking process, and you're working immediately with the director as well as the producer, because someone's got to pay for it.
Right. Are you on set fairly constantly during the actual filming?
Absolutely. I start usually, well, it depends on the size of the project. Some films I've started on, you know, 3 or 4 months in advance. Then the filming can take a month to 2 or even sometimes 3 months, again, depending on how complicated it is. But every day I start my day at the set. That's even after we've started shooting. I come on the set in the morning. I make sure everything is okay, make sure no one's got any problems, make sure everyone's happy with the props, with anything that's, you know, potentially going to come up during the day as a potential question mark. And then after everyone seems to be happy, then I leave and go off and prepare the next sets. And some of them are the next day, and some of them are in a week, and some of them are in a month. So it's a big juggling match, and I have lots and lots of really talented people helping me.
Do you have any, I mentioned that Broadcast News is one of my favorite films. Do you have any recollections, any stories from the shoot of that film?
Oh, my goodness. Well, that was an amazing experience.
James L. Brooks.
James L. Brooks is, you know, one of the geniuses of our time. And I started with him on Terms of Endearment, and when we did Broadcast News, we were going to shoot it in Washington, because that's where it took place and that's where Jim wanted to do it. But it was during the time of the Iran-Contra affair.
Mm.
And one of the people who was an advisor to us and who was a good friend of Jim's, her name is Susan Zirinsky, and she works over at CBS. And she would call us daily with the latest and greatest of what was going on in the Iran-Contra affair. But we were also going in and actually sitting in at the newsrooms of all the major stations. And that was just eye-opening and amazing to watch how they, you know, turn on a dime and figure out what they're going to be saying and what they're going to be doing and how fast it all has to happen. And the scenes that take place in that film are exactly how it does happen. I mean, everything is done at breakneck speed. I think these days a lot more digital is sort of taking over, but for the most part, it's just like you saw it in the film. And it was just an amazing experience. And I remember a couple of things. Albert Brooks did a whole half an hour on a piece of fuzz that he found on his sweater as we were all standing around waiting to shoot. You know,
yes.
He just had us all in stitches. And the other thing that was really fascinating was how hard it was for actors to learn how to speak and be in front of a camera as a news broadcaster. It's a very different kind of syntax and cadence and everything. And I remember we were, you know, all of us were sort of fascinated at how hard it was for them to really kind of get it. And one of the interesting things was that Jack Nicholson showed up and did it like with his eyes closed. I mean, he just walked on the set and he sat there. He got his clothes on. He got there the day before. We dressed him. We put him in front of the camera and he just did it. And we were all amazed. And it was everyone was saying, yeah, well, you know, it's Jack. But I think it was a really fascinating thing, and they're heroes, those people. I'm not kidding.
You know,
they really and truly are.
I was thinking while I was getting ready to, when I was going over the notes to interview you, and looked at Broadcast News. It was one of the earlier films that you did, and I show this, I show that film to my class. I teach an interviewing class and TV radio production class. And I show that film. And one of the things that often comes, because to me, it's a classic. To them, it looks really dated. And is does that interest you of what it is about films that date them visually versus films that you can see 20 or 30 years later and there is little impact?
Well, I think it's just fascinating because I also have one of the other films that I did more recently was the second Wall Street film, Wall Street Money Never Sleeps.
Right.
And the changes that have happened, you know, in the rooms where they are now buying and selling and doing all of their fancy sales work, all of those computers and all that stuff has changed dramatically from the first time. And in fact, one of the things that we laughed about is when Michael Douglas is being let out of jail and they're handing him his cell phone, and it's the size of a shoebox, you know. So from the time that he had been in until he gets out, you know, technology has changed a hundredfold. And I think that's true about Broadcast News, but I don't think that the story about Broadcast News is dated. In fact, I think it's every bit as real then, now as it was then. And in fact, the issues that are being brought to bear in that story are absolutely true and still are true. I think what's going on now with all the tweeting and the you know, Facebooking and how things are being told to us, that's different.
Mm-hmm.
That's hugely different. So that, you know, if you were going to make Broadcast News now, the technology would be, you know, all over you, and you'd be trying to figure out how to make it work on camera.
But there's that scene where Holly Hunter is giving a speech before her colleagues, and she's talking about war and talking about Nicaragua, and she said, but more people want to watch this, and they show a clip of dominoes going over, and at the end everybody claps, and she goes, well, I hope you like it because you're going to be seeing a lot more of it. And that's certainly turned out to be the case.
Yeah, but I think, you know, I think technology certainly is going to eclipse certain things, but I think that at the core of any good movie is a good story.
Absolutely.
And I think that when you look at all the other films that I've been fortunate enough to work on, they all start with a really, really good story. And those are the kinds of films, you know, maybe it'll get made again. You know, some
right.
of them have.
Yes.
But it
disturbs me when it happens really, during our lifetime, though.
I know. That gives me the creeps.
Even after we're dead and forgotten about them.
I remember Brett Ratner, when he met me for the first time, said, I've been a fan of yours since I was a kid. I said, okay.
Lovely, you know, to hear, isn't it?
Yeah, it makes you feel great. You know, she did the first Silence of the Lambs, you know. Oh, my God.
Well, it's going to be such a treat to have you in the region and have you here Saturday night and talking about this film and talking about your work. It's all going to happen as part of the Real Women in Film series at the Linda in Albany on Saturday night at 8 o'clock. Christy Zia, I thank you so much for being with us. I thank you so much for sharing with us this morning. You're just a delight, and we look forward to having you here on Saturday night.
I'm very excited, and I can't wait to see you all.
Thank you very much. Again,
thank you.
The film, Everybody Knows Elizabeth Murray, will be shown as part of the Real Women in Film series at the Linda in Albany Saturday night, 8 o'clock, and Christy Zia will be there speaking after the film. TheLinda.org for more information. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.